Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
All right, guys, welcome back to the podcast. We're going to get to our conversation here shortly with Zach Blair and the golf course architect for Sweetens Cove and what ultimately will be the Buck Club, Mr. Rob Collins. We wanted to catch up with them to see what the status of the Buck Club is. A lot of people have a lot of questions about that. And we also spend a lot of time talking about Sweetens Cove. Of course, a lot has been written about Sweetens Cove over the last several years, but it is a pretty remarkable story about how this golf course came to be. And having just left playing it all weekend, I was even more impressed the second time around. And it's a course that a lot of people have had a lot of good things to say about over the last several years, but it wasn't really until this past trip that I really, really would say that I now get it and kind of see the genius behind it. So as best as we can, we try to talk to Rob about how it came together and what his inspirations were, the challenges that come with it, and how they're going to replicate that at the Buck Club in Utah, and why Zach has employed Rob to help him with the project and help design it. So we left again feeling pretty inspired after talking to these guys and hearing all they had to say this weekend and seeing the actual layout and the plans for the Buck Club. So hope this answers a lot of questions that are out there about this golf course that does not fully exist yet, except on paper. So before we get going, I want to make sure you guys check out Callaway's new Golf Lives home course. It's original short films, and they set out to profile three unique golf locations around the country based on their stories, the communities, and the characters. The three stops are at Edgefield, which is a laid-back golf course outside Portland. They got two par three courses there, 12 and 20 holes, and a distillery bar as the pro shop. And then there's Langston. It's just about 15 minutes from the White House, and it's known for its triumphant role in the desegregation of public golf. And lastly is Wild Horse Golf Club. It's widely considered one of the top public courses in the country, and was built by farmers in a community in Gothenburg, Nebraska. So the cultures across the series are the cultures across the series are remarkably diverse, and the courses are united by the passion of the players who call them home, a lot like the golf courses that we're going to talk about on this podcast with Zach and Rob. So visit callawaygolf.com/golflives to watch each episode of Golf Lives Home Course. Now let's get to the podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up podcast. Solly here, Tron is here. We wanted to try to catch these two gentlemen this past weekend at Sweetens Cove at the Ringer. We weren't able to make it happen, but we're joined by the co-architects of the Buck Club, Zach Blair and Rob Collins. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, sure.
That's right. Yeah.
So we want to talk a bit about, so obviously we all went to the Ringer at Sweetens Cove. Zach, I want you to first kind of take us to why we were all meeting in Tennessee this past weekend, what you and Rob are working on, and why Sweetens Cove has played a role in this.
For me, kind of, I had this idea a few months back of trying to get a bunch of people that have been interested in the project and wanted to learn more about it or meet other people that have liked the whole idea behind TBC and try and get them in one place to just kind of it was more honestly of like a networking event to meet some people that are interested and kind of share some ideas. And, you know, hopefully those guys know a couple people that are interested where they can kind of tell them what went down and what they learned. And yeah, I mean, we chose Sweetens Cove. It was a perfect spot. You know, obviously Rob and Tad did an awesome job out there, and it really showcases kind of their ideas and their design philosophies. So it was a perfect place to hold that at, and it was, you know, everybody had fun, so it was great.
Rob, I can't imagine how many times you've told the story, but a lot of people listening to this podcast, I'm sure, have been to Sweetens Cove, but I'm sure there's also a lot that have never been there. So I want you to take us there as to what it is, what it was before you turned it into Sweetens Cove, and kind of, I can't imagine how many times you've told that story, but we'd love to hear it.
Yeah, for sure. So this is, I'll kind of give you the Reader's Digest version, and if you want to, if you need any additional details, I can definitely fill you in. But so Tad and I were hired in 2011 to rebuild the old Sequatchie Valley Golf and Country Club, and there's still the mysterious blue sign up there that the day, our day opening day in 2014, Ari Techner, one of my partners at Sweet and Scope, went out and stuck the little sign down on the road sign, and that's kind of all part of it too. But anyway, Tad and I started in 11, we finished it in 12. The guys who financed the construction basically deciding that they didn't really want to deal with it, and so they ended up leasing it to me, and after a little bit of a negotiation period, I took it over with a group of partners in 2014, and we got it open. And as far as what it was like beforehand, it was just a dead flat pasture land. The Squatchy Valley Golf Course was just a, you know, really country flat golf course, and you know, Tron called Sweet and Scope like Disneyland, and I mean, that's basically, I mean, I think that's like the best like one word description of it. I mean, it's kind of just all pulled out of thin air and in the middle of this random place, and it's just, you know, a lot of fun shots, kind of different looking, and you know, things are, it's all my favorite stuff in architecture just kind of blended up and spit out into one golf course. And that's basically Sweet and Scope, and we've been open now for almost exactly 4 years, and Ringer was the perfect 4 year anniversary for us. It was an unbelievable weekend.
Rob, how did you find it in the first place? I call it a big adult sandbox as well. It's kind of the most fun you can have if you're a golfer. But how did you find it? How did you get set up at Sequatchie Valley in the first place?
I really was desperate to get back into architecture. I was kind of a victim of the financial crisis in 2008. You know, my partner Tad King and I had discussed going into business before, and the financial crisis kind of forced our hand, and we were like, screw it, let's do it. And so we went into business, and you know, we were really, you know, looking for a first course, and I was doing anything I could to stay in the business, and I really wanted to get involved with the project up at Suwannee, which is a 9-hole course that Gil Hans did. Actually went to Suwannee, so I knew a lot about it, and I got in touch with this guy who was kind of running things up. His name's King Emig. He's a kind of a local golfing legend in Chattanooga, and he was heavily involved with the Suwannee project, and he said, I'd love to help you out getting involved with that, but I just heard about this new project down in the valley. The guys that own Sequatchie Concrete are thinking about doing something there. I'll put you in touch with them, and one thing led to another.
Could you have imagined that Sweetens Cove would have turned into what it is today?
It's unbelievable. I mean, it's you know, it's a little bit of a surreal feeling. I mean, because I lived the whole story of it in the ups and downs. There's been a lot of downs, and there's been a lot of uncertainty for the last 6-7 years, you know, through construction and the course, you know, getting left, and then there was a gap in time where we had to take it over, and you know, we went broke in 2014 right after we opened, and then the fact that there's people from all over the country and the world there with Zach and all you guys last week is just, it's kind of hard to believe, you know. I mean, after everything that we went through to get to that point, it does blow my mind. But I will say that, you know, I was so intent on getting back into architecture and making a name for King Collins that, you know, the analogy I had in my mind, I've never really said this will probably sound kind of obnoxious, but I wanted to give a Crumpian effort to it. You know, this was going to be like my Pine Valley. You know, I was going to die out there if I had to get one in the ground, and there's no way in hell I was going to stop or quit. And, you know, we somehow, some way made it happen, and I knew it was good. And I knew that if it ever saw the light of day, people would really like it. But there was so much uncertainty and so much financial uncertainty that I didn't know if it ever would see the light of day. So that's really the amazing thing, is that we've made it this far.
But Zach, what was your initial kind of reaction, or did it, How did it differ from how people described it the first time you played it, I believe back in March or April of this year?
Yeah, so I had, heard a lot about it. I had actually talked to Rob and Tad kind of over Twitter and seen all the posts, you know, heard Andy talk about it, heard you guys, you know, say how much you liked it. So, I obviously had high expectations going in. And, when you go there, it's kind of undescribable how much fun it is, how many options there are on each hole, the green complexes, and all the short grass everywhere. It's just so much fun. It's so much different than what you see at really any other golf courses you go play. That it's kind of, it's just amazing. It's really cool. So, I had already decided to bring Rob and Tad on to help with the Buck Club before I went and saw Sweetens. And literally like two holes in, once I got out there, I was like, yeah, I made the right decision. So it was pretty cool.
Well, broadly speaking, I know you were on the podcast last year, and we talked in some pretty good detail about the Buck Club, but kind of want to hear from you, for those that didn't hear that, what the Buck Club is, how you dreamed it up, and kind of what the progress has been over the last year since we last discussed it on the podcast.
Yeah, so, the whole idea behind the place is to just bring kind of like a pure golf club to Utah. We don't really have anything that caters just strictly to golf, and we don't really have any place kind of like Sweetens or like a Cal Club or a Whisper Rock, or where the kind of golf geeks can go nerd out and have fun. And I thought it would be a perfect place just because there are a lot of people in Utah and around the area that appreciate that stuff. So I thought it'd be cool to do that. It's been kind of a project for the last, 6 years, I would say. And it's picked up a lot of momentum over the last couple of years, and especially lately. And just basically looking for some investors and some people to help out. But everyone's kind of catching the buzz and kind of riding the wave right now. So it's been really cool to see the progress, and hopefully we can get something going here shortly.
For those that haven't seen either place, Sweetens Cove sits pretty much at the bottom of a valley, and the Buck Club is very mountainous terrain, so it's very different terrains. But Rob, I want to know what you thought of what eventually would become Sweetens the first time you kind of saw that land, how that went.
Well, King called me and said, hey, Rob, let's go out there and check this place out. And we went out there and we're walking around, and there was this old shed down there with a bunch of broken down equipment, and we were just looking out at this dead flat piece of ground with the open concrete ditch running down the middle of 7 and 8. And I thought, what in the hell are you doing with your life, you loser? This is not good. If this is where you've got to start, there's a problem. And it was, Tad and I have said this. It was the worst golf course I've ever seen. And that's not a hyperbolic statement. That's just what it was. And, but we got the job. And the great thing about it was it was a blank slate. And I don't know that, we got so lucky with our client, Reese Thomas. He believed in us, and he just was like, he let us go out there and do that. There's a lot of guys who are far more accomplished, have a much bigger resume than us, for a project that wouldn't get turned loose like that. So we were really, really lucky to have him believe in us and turn us loose. And we had some extraordinarily talented people helping us. And, next thing Sweet Scope came out of that. But it was a tough beginning, I will say that.
And going from that kind of location to start with to a place like the Buck Club, are they opposite ends of the spectrum?
Oh, totally. You look at the land at the Buck Club and you're just freaking out at the possibilities. The hole that we call the Mega Redan, the first time we were out there last year and at the end of October, it's obvious, Zach, it would say the same thing, that is a Redan. And it's just got this huge kicker on the right, and there's like this perfect cliff where you can build a bunker. You hardly have to do anything. And it's just tailor-made for this small world Redan. I mean, you'd be an idiot to not be able to build a good Redan there. So thrilling to be involved with this project in a place that has this much potential. I mean, it has got so much potential. It's just, God, we get goosebumps just thinking about it.
Yeah, I guess a question for each of you. Rob, what have you learned from Zach, or what are you most impressed with by Zach, coming from a professional golf background? And then conversely, Zach, what have you learned from Rob as this process has gone along?
Well, somebody asked me a question the other day, kind of about how Zach and I work. And I'll try to answer your question, Tron. But I'll start off by saying that Zach and I, it oftentimes feels like we're kind of sharing a brain on this, because we're basically mining the same well of information, the same pool of information. We like the same stuff. We're, you know, coming from the same place. Like, Zach will throw out an idea, and every single time I'm like, wow, that's a phenomenal idea. Let's do it. And so we're kind of, we're in the same headspace. And, you know, I have learned from Zach, listening to him talk about how, you know, different ways to challenge, you know, the tour player and the better player. And it's kind of solidified my belief that one thing I don't think a lot of modern golf courses get right is the dynamic of how playability versus penalty works. And, you know, I am all for a very, very playable golf course. Sweetens Cove is, as you guys know, a very, very playable golf course. But there, you can get ejected, I mean, if you get in the wrong position. And I think that's a really important dynamic that you have to maintain. I mean, that's where the thrill of golf comes in. It's in the thrill of challenging that hazard or challenging that contour and being successful. And if you're not successful, paying the price. So, you know, Zach, in the way he looks at things and his belief that, you know, you need to have that dynamic, has strengthened, you know, that belief in me. And I think that that's a place where Zach really excels, because he can hit shots that the rest of us can't hit, except for maybe Sully. And you know, he thinks about things and understands how you can challenge, you know, the really elite player, but at the same time give other people a chance. And I think that that's going to be a really cool dynamic at the Buck Club.
And Zach, going to you, what have you learned from Rob through this process?
Well, I would say first off, you know, originally when I had this idea, you know, the first couple of years, I had kind of said, hey, I'm going to do this thing on my own. We're not going to hire an architect. You know, we don't need one. But, you know, I can do this myself. And I feel like I could have done it myself. But after talking to Rob, you know, via Twitter, like, that's literally how this started. You know, I was asking him ideas and, you know, asking him what he thought, and, you know, just random, like, chats on Twitter, like, every couple of weeks. And then hearing about Sweetens Cove from people that, you know, I trusted their opinions, I was like, dude, we need to get these guys out here and at least see what they think, meet them. And I would say within, like, 30 minutes of meeting those guys and talking to Rob and getting on the, you know, on the site, walking around, I was like, okay, like, screw my idea of, like, doing it by myself. Like, this guy is, like, the guy I want to bring in. And he mentioned it, you know, we think very similarly. We have a lot of ideas that are the same. And like he said, when I say something and he's like, man, that's a good idea, he does the exact same thing, like, every time we talk, and we talk about this every single day. So it's pretty cool to have somebody like that. We have the same design philosophies about making courses playable and, you know, making them fun enough for the average golfer, but hard enough for players that are good. And I mean, that's the thing that Utah for sure is definitely missing, and it's missing in a lot more places than Utah, but we have nothing even on the same level as something like Sweetens Cove. And if we can build something like that, 18 holes or however, whatever we're going to do out at TBC, like it's going to be a home run and people are going to travel from all over the world to come play it like they do at Sweetens. So I'm very proud like to have Rob and Tad on board, and it's been really cool working with them. And I mean, you know, Rob talked about how he made, you know, how Sweetens was kind of his version of Pine Valley with, you know, compared to Crump, and how it was kind of his brainchild, and he literally died on property working on it and trying to make that happen. And, you know, that's kind of what we've done with TBC. It's something that we do every day, talk about all the time. And, you know, we've got so much blood, sweat, and tears into this thing and this whole design process that I think it's going to really blow people away with, you know, when it's finished and when they see it.
I want to piggyback on something Zach was saying right there. And, you know, that is, I mentioned this to Zach when I was in Utah. I was fortunate that Sweetens Cove, we first got approached in like July of 2010, and there was kind of this relationship with the client that didn't formalize for like 8 months. So I had like 8 months to dream about it. And each hole at Sweetens Cove went through like 4 or 5 iterations. And like the first versions of the holes I thought were like really good. But, you know, in hindsight, they weren't anywhere near as good as what turned out. And that sort of baking process that it went through really helped make Sweetens Cove what it is. It gave me time, and it gave Tad and I time to kind of formulate this full-on plan, and the end result was much better. And you know, I'm sure Zach wishes in some respects that TBC was, you know, already built, and we were doing this podcast from the porch of the clubhouse. But the time that it's taken to go through things, and you know, each time Zach throws out an idea, it's infinitesimally better. You know, he just incrementally just keeps getting better, better, better. And now we're finally at a place where I really think we have a plan that's mature and has kind of gone through the process and gone through the necessary revisions. I mean, it's like writing a book in some regard. I mean, you don't go with your rough draft. I mean, this is a fully baked concept, and it's money. I mean, we're going to kill it.
I mean, I'm not joking that I said I walked away from this weekend just feeling inspired. Like, and I think, Zach, when we talked last fall, I mean, you had ideas for holes, you had sketches, you knew kind of what you wanted to do. But is it fair to say, like, you didn't have this concept that currently exists? And if I'm right in saying all 18 holes and even some bonus holes are laid out and like set in stone for what you guys are going to do. Is that right?
Yeah. We have like a championship style routing that you can go play 18 holes. We also have, you know, some fun holes that kind of you can play if you want. You can kind of go do whatever you want. This idea that we have right now with this place is pretty outrageous. You know, we got like 22 green complexes, a ton of fairway, big putting surfaces, and you know, you can go play it, like I said, like a normal 18-hole golf course, or, you know, if it's not busy, you can go out there and kind of treat it like a big putting green and just go play to whatever hole you want. And that's one cool thing that they offer out at Sweetens Cove. And it's just something that you don't see that often. And it's something that I think takes a lot of thought and a lot of, you know, it takes a lot of thought to pull something like that off. And like Rob was saying, you know, this thing has gone through the ringer and just, you know, iteration after iteration changed and gotten better and kind of matured to where it is now. And, you know, it's at the point now where, you know, if we can get some funding, you know, we're going to have one of the best golf courses in the world, which will be fun.
As far as once you do get that funding locked up, when you do get that funding locked up, what do you envision the membership model or, you know, whether it be semi-private or private or kind of a English, Scottish style club setup? Describe that for us.
Yeah, you know, the one thing that I've always wanted, a great national and international membership. We want it at a price point that is extremely doable for people all around the world and all around the country to be able to come in and show this place off to their friends and, you know, bring groups out kind of like they do at Sweetens Cove and have this course, you know, ready to play for a bunch of people and just so everyone can come in and have fun. So, I guess to answer your question, you know, looking for a big national membership and hopefully, you know, hopefully people will be down for that and come out and support and join the club and bring a bunch of their friends and go have fun.
So you will need a member invite to get out to play. Any unaccompanied rates or anything that's going to kind of follow like the Sand Hills model or any, or Terra Edie model or anything like that?
Yeah. You know, the Sand Hills model, I'm a little familiar with it. Not so much. I'm not as familiar with the Terra Edie model, but you know, we definitely want to offer, you know, an option for people to come play it. And that's how you get a good national membership, I think, is by allowing some sort of access for people to get out there and play it. Because I think it's going to be a type of place where if you can go out and play it, or if you get the chance to go and play it, you're definitely going to leave being like, okay, how do I make this work? Like, this is something that I need to have work. So yeah, I definitely think you'll have the ability to see it and play it and hopefully want to join right after you're done.
Playing the devil's advocate role here, and I'm going to take the role of an online hater, which I'm sure there are at least some on Twitter that kind of are very skeptical about this coming together. And a lot of people, some of the reaction I get is like, what are you wearing there? What hat is that? Oh, it's the Buck Club. Where's that? Well, it's going to be in Utah because you have an entire merchandise line, belt, every piece of swag you could imagine exists for this golf course that does not yet exist. What is the purpose, I guess, of all of the extracurricular stuff that has come with this project or with the Buck Club gear and all of the hype? Like, what is that? What are you doing that for? And what's that doing for the Buck Club?
Well, for me, you know, I kind of just went in saying like, okay, I have this idea. I really think it's going to work, but I don't have the money to pull something like this off by myself. How can I, you know, spread the word and get this idea out there for somebody that, you know, hopefully falls in love with it? And my idea was like, let's like make this brand and push this stuff out there, get people talking about it, get people wearing it, get people loving this idea. And, you know, that's kind of just what I did. You know, I started off with hats, and, you know, the first couple of, I guess, months or first year or two when I was, you know, selling this stuff, I think there were a lot more haters and a lot more people that were very skeptical of this idea of like, oh my God, like who would wear a shirt or a hat from a course that doesn't exist? But I would say like now that idea is pretty laughable to think at. You know, I have people coming up to us all the time being like, where can I buy this hat? Where can I buy this shirt? You know, how do I get in on this? You know, tell me more about it. And it's been kind of this guerrilla marketing effort, just getting the word out there and kind of, you know, casting this huge net out in the golfing world, and just hopefully somebody bites and catches on, falls in love with it, and wants to be a part of it.
Zach, what's the status of the land that you have out in Utah right now? Do you have it? Do you have it purchased? Do you have an option on it? How's that work?
Yeah, working on it right now. One of the partners came out to the ringer. Had a great time, and kind of, I think it was a real eye-opening experience for him to kind of really fully realize like, wow, this isn't just like some kid's idea with, you know, a couple of friends from Utah. You know, he saw 60 plus people from around the world come out and support this event, you know, for a golf course that doesn't exist. And
not only that, there were hundreds of people who had, you know, who were on a waiting list. I mean, it was an unbelievable response.
Yeah. So I think we're going to get in some, you know, serious conversations in the next few days with the landowners, and hopefully we can lock something up. And like we said, just still looking for people to come help out and jump on board. And, you know, I think we have a real unique opportunity offering something that not too many places can offer, you know, getting in kind of on the ground level and being involved in a process of building and joining a club that really has a chance to be one of the more special projects in the last, you know, 20 to 30 years of golf.
And Rob, you touched on this a little bit, and Zach, I want to hear from you next on this, because you've done basically a shitload of travel around the world to learn from a lot of different places. But Rob, I know we talked some about what your inspirations were for Sweetens Cove, kind of some of those courses, but is there anything else you're drawing inspiration for in the building of the Buck Club that you've seen?
Well, I think that Zach and I have a share of, you know, mutual affinity for National Golf Links. In the old course, I mean, there's, I think Zach would agree that there's a whole lot of the old course and a whole lot of National kind of baked into the Buck Club. And one of the things I think will be really cool about how that all shakes out in the field, you know, is Zach and Tad and I kind of massage things in, is that you may not look at something and go, oh, that's like, you know, the 14th hole at the old course, or that's like, you know, number three at National. There's going to be like little bits and pieces of it that's kind of expressed in a different and unique way. It's mainly taking the underlying lessons from those types of places and applying them to the amazing piece of property that we've identified and spent all this time, you know, coming up with this plan on.
And Zach, what have you seen that just kind of like has really sat with you, really resonated with you, or anything maybe you've seen in the last year that has changed what you thought you might do with the Buck Club?
You know, for me, it's just, I've had the opportunity and have been lucky enough to travel and play the best golf courses around the world. And my idea kind of from the get-go was to go to these places and see what makes them great, see what makes these holes great, or see what makes these clubs the way they are, and just kind of cherry pick ideas and philosophies from each place and throw them all into one huge pile and just make this amazing club. And as far as the golf course, I would say, you know, our trip down to Australia, you know, going over to Scotland one more time and just seeing how amazing like short grass is has really been pumped into TBC over the last couple of months. I've just like, you know, kind of taking some bunkers out around the greens and, you know, making it more short grass, just giving people more options and some different playability that they won't see necessarily too many places in the States. I think that's kind of one thing that will be a definite tone setter and something that sets it apart from other clubs. And it's going to be really cool to see how it shakes out.
Zach, on that subject, from an agronomy perspective, what kind of grass do you have out in Utah? And, you know, can you get it as nippy and as firm as you need to play like you want it to?
Yeah, I think a big thing for me and Rob and, you know, some other people that are involved is definitely like playability of the golf course. You know, you have all these ideas and you want them to play a certain way. And in order to do that, you know, we're not blessed with, you know, being on some like sand dunes, like in Sand Hills or on the coast of somewhere with some real sandy property. We're going to have to, you know, spend some money and bring in some sand in to sand cap the place more and making sure we can get it firm and fast, because that's kind of an underlying principle that needs to happen in order for the course to play well. Cause we want it to play firm and fast. And as far as the grass goes, I think we're going to have to, you know, do some testing and see what works. But as far as I'm concerned, you know, there are places in Utah that you can get really firm and fast, and I'm excited to see kind of what route we go with that. And I think people will be pretty happy when they see it finished.
Having spent now, I guess, 4 or 5 full days at Sweetens, what's your favorite hole out there?
For me, you know, 5 is pretty ridiculous. I think that's one of the 5 and 7, I would say, are two of the best short par fours in the entire world. Like, and that's,
describe them for us.
5, go, you know, 5, how long is 5, Rob? Like 3?
It's like 5's like 283 from the tips, 290, something something like that, like way, way back. Like we were playing it, we played it a lot this weekend from like, it was kind of fun playing it from like 240, 250, 75, probably is about as long as we played it this weekend.
Yeah, so it's, you know, under, you know, sub 300, big fairway, but like, you know, you're always going for the green, it seems like. And there's one big giant, you know, not giant, there's one bunker right in the middle of the green, basically, that the green wraps around it. And the green's built up, you know, 10 feet, probably 8 to 10 feet, falls off, you know, all directions. And, you know, the internal contours on the green that kind of let you, you know, allow you to play balls to the right side of the green that will feed around the bunker, kind of to these back left pins. You know, it's a pretty brilliant hole that's like so easy until you screw up, and then it's just like disaster is lurking everywhere. Like we put a couple of pins kind of left this week over this bunker that were so nasty. Like I think a couple people died in the bunker this week.
There have been so many good ejection videos showing up on Twitter. I was
watching
a couple of them today. That Peter Schmidt and Jim Hartzell had amazing ejections ever.
Yeah, I mean, it's just such a cool hole. And like I said, it's just like it's so easy. It's like, you know, the green's pretty big. Well, how many square feet is that? Like 8 or 9, you know, like 8,000 square feet probably?
Yeah, it's something like that. I mean, yeah.
A lot of room to hit your ball, but the second you miss, it's just like the second you miss on that hole, you kind of have to risk making like a double bogey if you want to make a par, if that makes sense. And that's one thing that I've kind of told like Rob in this whole design process, like that's the type of stuff you want. You want options and you want holes to be scoreable. But when somebody screws up and gets aggressive and misses in a wrong spot or tries to hit a miracle shot, if they don't pull it off, you know, you kind of want to punch them in the face. And that's kind of a hole like that. And then 7 is another hole, you know, probably like 330, drivable, little teeny green that's kind of like, I would say, has some Pinehurst number 2 in it, like a bowl turned over, falls off on all sides. And I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen like so many people get ejected as I saw.
Dude, I personally, that hole like haunts my dreams. I don't think I figured out, I've probably played that hole 50 or 60 times now. I don't think I've ever figured out how to play it correctly. I've gone 70 yards left. I've gone down the adjacent fairway on the right side. I've hit an 8-iron off the tee. I've hit driver over the green. It's like I've been searching and searching and searching, and there's no recipe for it. You just got to sack up and hit 2 good shots.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly the perfect way to describe that. You could hit 9-iron off the tee. You could hit driver, you know, and whatever you do, you just have to kind of like say, okay, I'm going to hit it in the, you know, middle or, you know, the middle front or the middle back, wherever the pin is, and just try and make a putt. Because that hole, you know, anytime the pin is not in the center of the green, anytime it's around the sides or the edges, if you try and take it on and you miss, you're staring like double or triple in the face. You can just hit it back and forth all day. But if you went into that hole saying like, okay, I'm going to hit driver down the right and have a 70 yard shot or a 60 yard shot, and I'm just going to hit it to the middle of the green, I would say you'd make par like 95 to 99% of the time. If you hit a decent shot,
if you execute.
But that hole is, yeah. But that hole is so tempting to go for the pin. You know, you have such a short shot. It doesn't look as intimidating as it really is. The second you go for it and miss, you just kind of get, ejected. That's a perfect, that's what you want in golf, though. You know, and that's what we want to do at TBC is, and that hole is surrounded the whole way, short grass around the entire hole. There's no greenside bunkering. There is the big bunker short left, like in the fairway, but that hole, you just are presented with so many options, and, you know, you can drive the green and make eagle, or you can, you know, try and drive the green and make a seven. So it's pretty cool.
I was shocked this weekend how many people, we played a four club round, you know, competition, and I was shocked at how many people scored better during the four club competition than they did with a full bag. It was just like taking, you know, like making them do a certain thing and commit and committing to it instead of trying to decipher how to play it and then not being committed to a shot. I know, Sally, you were blown away at how well you played with the four club.
I might just be a four club player now. It works so well at Sweetens. I mean, it is kind of like at one point I had to decide between hitting a driver into a par five or a nine iron with the two clubs I was between. And I just had to like punt. I had to punch a driver and like try to use the slope to kill it into the bank. And when I executed that one, I had more joy than I ever would have experienced if I'd hit like the six iron that I probably needed to. So one thing you guys introduced this weekend too, for our competition. So for the Ringer, you know, 60 people are playing in this event, and we did like all kinds of different formats, Stableford's, you know, four club challenge, a team event. But I've never seen this where you introduce two different pins and the Stableford points were different. If you went for the colored flags, it was more points than the easy pins. And for a golf course that already presents just a million options, I was overwhelmed with the option. Like three different times the front pin on one, I said, this is the hardest pin I've ever seen. And I ended up getting goaded into going for it all three times. How did that process come together of coming up with that format?
For me, you know, I went in thinking like Sweetens has these very unique green complexes that there's a lot of really easy pins like in bowls. And then there's a lot of pins that are on, you know, totally flat parts of the green, but are like surrounded by death. And I was like, this course would present so well with multiple pins out there, you know, because we were only there for 2 days and we played golf basically sun up till sundown both days. But at a truly great golf course and a place like Sweetens Cove, you have to keep playing it over and over to really see different things. And every time you play it, you learn new things or see different stuff. So I thought it'd be a cool way to kind of show the course off even better than it shows off with one pin. And I think people really, really like loved that format, and it was really cool. And I mean, that's another thing at TBC. Like, I think we should do that like a couple times a week, have multiple pins out there. The greens are so big, and the idea behind them is to allow so much variety that it's pretty fun to go do something like that.
It was really cool going around with people who had never played the course before, and like on number four, the front pin on Saturday, it was like 100 yards.
It was between 83 yards. It was 100 yards between the flags.
Between the flags,
front pin was like 83, and then the back one was like 170, something like that. And Rob, what's it? I mean, what was it like, I guess, having, you know, 60 people or 60 or so people come in from pretty much everywhere to play this golf course after all you guys have been through? And could you have ever really pictured Sweetens Cove becoming what it has become?
No, that was just the biggest thrill for me. I mean, I pretty much had a shit-eating grin on my face the whole weekend. I mean, the fact that there were 60 people there just having the best time and enjoying the golf course in the way that, you know, it was intended to be enjoyed was an unbelievable thrill for me. And, you know, the games that Zach and Panther Mike came up with were so clever and so much fun. I mean, I've played that golf course tons of times, and Patrick's played it like 1,000 times. And like I was talking to Patrick, I mean, we were seeing shots and spots and different things that we've never experienced before, because we were like playing from one pin to like, or like playing from one tee to a pin that we've never seen. Like that pin that was on one, that front left pin, I've never seen that before. And, you know, I shot the worst round I've probably shot there maybe ever in the Stableford format, because I was being aggressive on every single one, and I was just getting ejected on every single hole. And the more I got ejected, the more I was like, well, I've got to go for it, because I'm so far out of it, I've got to get 5 points, you know? And so that was like a really fun dynamic. The whole thing was, it was the most fun I've ever had playing golf. I can't thank Zach enough and all you guys and everybody who came together. It was so fun. I mean, I think the the quote of the weekend for me was somebody said, what happened? What's the disaster plan if something happens to golf Twitter, you know, in like a catastrophic event at Sweden Stone? Like, pretty much everybody was gonna be gone. It was just amazing having everybody out there. It was incredible.
Rob, when you're designing a hole like number four, like the green out there, number four, like at any point were you, did anybody pressure you to soften it or tell you that you were absolutely insane? Have you brought that mentality, anything that you learned from that into the Buck Club where, you know, now you're like, all right, people told me I was insane and then I built it. And then now everybody's like, oh, this hole's awesome. You kind of bring that confidence. It's almost like an irrational confidence.
Yeah. To be clear, you are insane, but like the right, just the right amount of insane.
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I totally agree with y'all. I mean, there is definitely a touch of insanity out there. Adam Lawrence had the English golf writer had the best line ever. The first time he saw it, he's like, bloody hell, Rob, I've seen a Himalayas green, but never on the golf course. And so, you know, I will totally concede, and I've said this before, that I had, you know, several sleepless nights during construction. In particular, when we were building number three, I was just like, oh, Lord, we've gone overboard, you know. You know, we were trying to touch the line but not go past it. And, you know, I have to give a ton of credit to Tad, my partner, in the finish work. He did an absolutely amazing job finishing those greens so that they maintained their playability. Like all of our pinnable areas are really subtle. So, you know, a lot of the contours outside the green or kind of on the edges of the green are big transitions. But once you're in the right spot, you know, you're going to be okay. And so you can go from one part of the green to the next and still most of the time stay on. If you hit a good shot, you'll be rewarded. So it maintains its playability in large part because of Tad's skill, but also because, I mean, there was a ton of attention to detail paid just in the regular shaping process and the construction process to make sure that we didn't come untethered and just float away into the ether. I mean, we had to keep it grounded in the fundamentals of good architecture, but we were definitely trying to push the envelope. And I mean, there was a couple times I was a little nervous. I mean, I was a little nervous on four. Gus, the guy that shaped the hole, that was probably like the fifth or sixth green he had built. And he and I were like really on the same page at that point. And it was just a bunch of dirt out there. And I painted the outline of the green, kind of knew where it was going to go, had some basic ideas. And he's like, Rob, man, just let me go fucking crazy here, okay? And I'm like, all right, Gus, go for it, man. And that's what came out, you know. And that's what you have to do with like really talented people like Gus and other people. You know, you have to get them to buy into the vision and you have to trust them and understand, you know, as long as they're working in a box that's part of the overall vision that you want, you just let those guys go. And if they're still working in that box, that, you know, drawing from the same well of information that you're drawing from, you know, you're 99% of the time you're going to get a great result. And it's more fun for Gus too, you know, because you've got freedom and you can have fun. And if there's something that's not right, I mean, you know, you change it. Like on number four, for instance, I thought that the back of the green during construction was too severe and there weren't enough pinnable areas. And Gus was like, Rob, come on, the street's like 20,000 square feet. And I'm like, no, man, we gotta mellow it out in a couple spots. And those are like the little changes, the little details that you make, you know. Everything was like 99% perfect. We just needed to like tweak it just a touch, and we did. And then Tad came in and like finished off this perfect green. And now it's like one of the coolest greens I've ever seen.
It's similar to a Native American like serpent mounding like burial ground than any golf course I've ever seen. Like I would compare it more to that than a golf course. It's awesome. It's like my favorite hole in the world.
Number four is your favorite, Tron?
I mean, I love five, but four is...
I mean, that's cool to hear because I love hearing people say their favorite hole. And, you know, a lot of times that's like one of my favorite things is you know, people always say a different hole, and I think that's really cool.
I think it's a different hole every time I've played it. I mean, for some reason, I love two, especially that bottom bowl pin there on two.
Oh, yeah.
Five is always incredible fun, but eight, especially when you put the pin right there in the middle of the beer, it's there. That one's an absolute blast. Like, and that's what's cool. One about playing two pins at once like we did is, like, that fourth green, it's basically like five greens in one. I mean, you can make 20 different golf holes out of one golf hole. And for a place that's only nine holes, I think along with all the cross country holes, which we haven't really even talked about.
I was going to say, I think my favorite holes are one of the cross country holes.
Yeah.
But I won't get into that.
And that's just kind of what that makes this place just this, like what you're saying, like this huge sandbox is, you know, yeah, you need the variability when you have a nine hole course to really take it to the next level. And that's what you guys done. But if we're sitting here, it's October 22nd, 2018. I hope like 40 years in the annals, somebody will uncover this podcast and hear this about the building of the Butt Club. But you're going to answer it now. What is a realistic expectation for shovels going in the ground at the Butt Club date-wise?
I mean, I think when snow melts in 2019.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, we've got a lot of momentum right now. You know, a couple of the partners of the land are a lot more on board, I think, after seeing what's been going on the last little while and coming out to the ringer. And just, you know, a lot of people have, you know, just kind of offered their word and just said that they want it to happen and that they'll be willing to kind of sack up and do what they need to do. So we've had a lot of positivity behind this thing, so we're ready to get it rolling.
Zach, how do you balance your golf career with that timeline or just with the Butt Club in general? How do you, you know, especially May 1st next year, shovels are in the ground, you're on the web tour primarily next year. That's kind of your big time of the year. How do you square those two things?
Yeah, I just gotta play better, I guess, so I can take more time off to get this thing get this thing done. At the end of the day, you know, something like this is, you know, bigger than some it's bigger than golf almost, you know. It's kind of a chance to build something that not a lot of people get to do. You know, there's a lot of great golfers in the world. There's probably fewer really unbelievable places, at least in America. So it's a cool opportunity for sure.
What on the financial front, how much do you need? How close are you? What else do you need on the monetary front to really push this thing through?
One, you know, we definitely need to lock this thing up with the partners at the land to see what we can do there, which I think we're on the right track. And then there are a few different options. You know, we either need somebody with super to come in and fall in love with the project and want to do something like this, or we need kind of a lot of people to step up and get involved, founding members and stuff like that. But we've had both sides of that kind of reach out and show interest. So now we just need people to step up.
Well, last thing, once you plug, Will, what you got going on with the online auction here, what's up for bid and what all that is going towards?
Yeah, so we got this online auction going on. We got some rounds at some really good clubs around the world. We got some pretty unique, one-of-a-kind pieces of artwork and some putters that were specially made for the event, you know, some irons that are custom for anybody who wins them. But all of that stuff is going to kind of the planning and development and the things that we need to kind of get in place, as far as, like, you know, Rob and Tad did this master plan kind of for free, or did it before they got paid, you know, which isn't, like, you know, master plans aren't cheap, stuff like that, for, you know, that I think you need to be able to show people, serious investors and stuff like that. So, you know, that stuff's going to pay Rob and Tad, future site visits, bringing people out, and just kind of the planning and development to make this thing actually happen.
I guess last question on my end, what hole for each of you guys, what hole are you most excited about that's on the current plan?
I mean, for me, it sounds crazy, but literally every single hole is...
I'm not letting you off the hook like that. One hole.
I'm pretty excited to see number seven, to be honest. It's this big cape-style hole, the green kind of hangs out over the edge of this cliff, kind of three sides of the green fall off way down this mountain, and it's like 390, but you can drive it, kind of everything that lands into like 260 to 270 area gets this massive kick and goes towards the green. But at the same time, if you try and bite off more than you can handle, you could probably like get lost in the sauce out there for sure.
Rob, what about you?
Well, I'll answer two different holes, one for me and one for Tad. I know that Tad is like over the moon excited about shaping the Sitwell green. There's a green that's inspired by McKenzie's famous Sitwell hole. Our version is going to be probably pushing an acre in size. I mean, it's going to be like twice as big as the big green at Sweeten, and it's going to be so insane and wild. I mean, it's going to be close to 40,000 square feet, and it's just going to be cascading up this hill. I mean, it's just, it is going to be utterly jaw-dropping when it's done, and one of the coolest holes in the entire world. For me, I was going to say 7. I think that's a really good one. Number 9, the little short hole, kind of encapsulates a lot of the stuff that Zach and I have been talking about. There's a little downhill shot. We're going to build this big barranca, like think LA Country Club or something like that, you know, kind of a natural drainage wash area. And this short hole, kind of inspired by the one at National, sits in the middle of the barranca. And like Paso Tiempo, you know, there's these gnarly bunkers that are kind of crawling up out of the barranca and, you know, growing into the green. And then right behind the green is number 10 tee, and it's all just this island in the barranca. And Zach and I are real sticklers about transitions between golf holes. That's one thing that we both pay a lot of attention to. Like really good golf courses, they like nail the transitions between holes. It's so good, it makes you want to go crazy. And like that has like maybe the coolest transition on the golf course. Plus, it's got the chance of like a birdie or maybe a hole in one if you step up and hit the great shot, or it's going to be like total ejection city if you don't hit the shot. I mean, it's kind of got all the dynamics, and I think that hole is going to be amazing.
Well, speaking for both of us, using some words of wisdom that I just learned today, I think let me say, just go fucking nuts, guys. Just go do it.
I love it. Yes.
So we're excited, man. Congratulations on a great week, Zach and Rob, and for all you guys have done and everything you're doing to get this project off the ground. I know a lot of people think it might not happen, but I left feeling pretty motivated and inspired to do anything I can to help make it happen. It sounds like it's going to be a real special place in the golf world. So thank you guys for taking the time to walk us through it and for giving us a great weekend of golf.
Awesome. Thanks for all your support, guys. It was great hanging out.
You too.
Yeah, thank you guys. Appreciate it. And, you know, we got to work on those handicaps next year.
I won the gross, man. It wasn't even net.
Oh, my God.
You can't sandbag when you win it gross.
Soli took all the big toys home.
Listen, all the ones that you would let me take home.
And like Kevin Kisner's on record as saying I'm the worst 6 handicap that's ever walked the face of the earth.
The place just inspires good play. Just let me say it. So
it really does. It really does.
Oh my gosh!
All right, what guys.
Fun. Thanks again.
Thanks for the time. Cheers.
Okay.
Thanks.
Cheers.
See you later. Crack on.
Cheers.
Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes.
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect